Hello and welcome to another Lush podcast, this one on craftivism. My name is Charlie Moores and I'll be the first to admit that crafts and craft making, well, it's not something I've really shown much interest in. There are, of course, millions of enlightened crafters around the world who could and should put me right and explain to me exactly what I've been missing out on. One of those that has is the remarkable Sarah Corbett of the Craftivist Collective, a group of like-minded crafters who practice what they term gentle activism under the banner of craftivism, which according to Wikipedia is a form of activism typically incorporating elements of anti-capitalism, environmentalism or third wave feminism that is centered on practices of craft. Which doesn't sound that inspiring, but as Sarah proves in this conversation, recorded in February 17 at the Lush Summit in London, when someone intelligent, with a wicked sense of humour, talks about something they have a real passion for, it really does sound inspiring, and fun, and beautifully thought out.
Craftivism.
Yep. You said it right. Loads of people get it wrong.
What can you get wrong?
Craftism.
Craftism.
Yeah. The whole point of it's activism, so you sort of missed
it's
out the important.
It's craft and activism, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's
you've missed out the most important bit, which is the activism.
Oh, I figured that out. Actually, I read your booklet as well that you gave me a few hours ago. I read as much as I could. I'd be lying if I said I read the whole
thing. It takes about 12 minutes to read, Charlie. I gave it. Russell Brand came to one of my workshops with his mum and I gave him the book and said, put it in your bathroom so whoever's there doing the business can have a little read because it's only little.
That would have appealed to him, that very idea.
No, it didn't. He looked at me completely shocked and said, that's a very odd thing to say. His mother was brilliant, really thoughtful, asked really good questions.
So what would be a really good question to ask you?
Are you asking me how to do your job?
Yeah.
I'd ask me, so what's the most important part of craftivism, Sarah?
What is the most important part of craftivism, Sarah?
Well, Charlie, a lot of people think craft is the main thing, but I think craftivism, the main thing should be activism, and
right,
the craft is the tool. So you shouldn't shoehorn your love of craft into activism if it doesn't fit, but where it can be useful, then use it.
Now, listen, yeah. I know what activism is.
Yeah.
I'm a bit woolly.
Lots of people don't. Lots of people say fundraising is activism, donation is activism, awareness raising on its own is activism.
Isn't that activism?
No. The point is you're challenging structures and systems that are causing harm. So if you're just raising awareness, you're not actually doing anything. You have to encourage people to act on it. So you either say, sign this petition or go on this, or you say, how can we fix this and get them to figure it out? But you have to act on it. Otherwise, the worst thing that could happen is you actually disempower people because you show them a really shocking image, like animal cruelty image, and go, awareness raising, here's a horrific image.
Yeah.
And people just go, it's so horrific, I don't know what to do about it. And I don't want to look at it, so I'm just going to pretend it doesn't exist. So you're, instead of empowering people, you're just scaring them.
So what would you do instead?
There's lots of different ways you can use craftivism. One of the main things is for the maker, it forces you to slow down. You do a repetitive hand action, so it's always handicrafts or paper crafts, and by doing that, it slows you down. So if you're really angry or anxious, it clears your mind, it helps you focus. And then when your hands know what to do with that repetitive action, I give people crafter thought questions to help you think through big issues. So it might be questions like, how are you involved in the problem of animal cruelty from when you wake up in the morning to when you go to sleep? And you'll be thinking about, okay, what do I eat? What makeup do I put on? What clothes do I wear that affects it? Do I live in a city or do I live in the country? How does that affect animals? So really thinking through quite often uncomfortable questions, but using the comfort of craft to think through them. Other questions. And then the piece of craft that you're making, you're also, I'd figure out what's the best use of it. So today at the Lush Summit, we were making something that you keep yourself as a physical reminder to be a good, effective activist,
yeah,
and not an ineffective, thoughtless activist. Or you might make a gift for a politician or someone in power to give them a gift instead of screaming at them and say, you're in a really influential position. I really want you to do a really good role in what you're doing. How can we help you to stop using animal cruelty products? I'm sure it's a really difficult job and it's complicated and you don't have much capacity, but I really care about this issue. And if we want the world to be a beautiful, gorgeous and kind place, animal cruelty doesn't fit that. So how can we help you do that? Or it might be bits of street art which provoke people rather than preach at them and say, this is awful. We'll give a fact about animals and how much products have got animal content in and ask people questions or leave provocative and intriguing messages for people to find and think for themselves, which means they take ownership much more of their thoughts than if you started screaming at them, which doesn't work if we want to change people's hearts and minds.
Wow.
Boom.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Sarah.
you've got to be strategic.
Yeah, and you talk about it being a slow form of activism,
yes,
don't you?
Definitely.
You mention that quite a lot.
Yeah.
But
which
that
is really
slow
important.
Doesn't mean ineffective.
No, and slow people think is a huge privilege. There's an amazing African proverb, and I keep trying to find where in Africa it's from, that says, in a state of urgency, we need to slow down. Because if we just act on anger and rage and sadness, our human nature is fight or flight. So we either want to run away and go, I don't want to think about it, or we want to fight and not think strategically. We just can't think clearly. And I've been an activist since I was 3. I grew up in an activist family. I've been a professional campaigner for different charities. And I read lots of reports on what works and what doesn't. And it's changing constantly because our context is.
Yeah.
But we have to be strategic and go, who are we trying to target? When? How? Where? Is it a policy we're trying to change? Is it culture? Is it our neighbour? Or is it a business or a whole sector? Like, we've got to be really strategic, which is why activism often puts off a lot of people, because they just want to do something to make them feel better that they're against an issue, and then it doesn't work.
Find people are coming to you after they've tried the intense activism and they've burnt out a little bit, because I know you've said you burnt out.
I did burn out
as a campaigner.
Yeah.
So I did read the book and I looked you up online.
Googled it, yeah.
Yeah, yes. That was a really intriguing thought, because I was thinking, so, you know, we all start full of fire and
yeah.
we're out marching and we're shouting, and after a while you do kind of look around and think, is there a better approach?
Yeah.
It's
a real
mix.
Was
that your introduction to it then? Is that how you came to find craftivism?
So I, typical millennial, I'm still just a millennial, even though I'm really old.
Let's get it. You look so young.
I look about 12, but
incredible.
I am 33, listeners.
For a burnt out activist,
so you might think, well, I always feel like I've got to slip it into conversations in case people think, what does she know? She's about 12. So I'm like, I've worked in the sector for 10 years.
No, I think anyone listening to you knows you know your stuff.
Well, but to look at, again,
really
the prejudice,
quick.
People go, oh, she's so young, does she know what she's talking about? And
yeah.
I grew up in a very low-income area, surrounded by inequality, so you can't not be involved in politics. I was squatting to save local social housing, which we won. I became head girl and campaigned to eradicate gym knickers from the pea kit,
yeah.
which I lost, but I did win lockers for the students. So very much grew
up
as an activist.
Head girl.
I was. I know, how geeky.
That's really cool.
Yeah. What was the question? I forgot.
How you got into craftivism?
Yeah,
because it started in America, didn't it?
It started by an American woman called Betsy Greer,
yeah.
who was actually in Goldsmiths in London doing a sociology master's.
Okay.
And she noticed in London that there were lots of women's groups, like knitting groups, people make doing and mending, and saw it as a form of activism. So create coined this term, craftivism, from craft and activism, in 2003.
Right.
And I googled it in 2008 because I was a complete burnt out activist, and I also, as well as burning out, because I'm an introvert as well, so to be an activist is so extrovert.
You said that in one of your lectures. You were there giving it the full go.
Which
and
is
you
different.
Were so bouncing around and being brilliant.
And then you went,
I'm actually really shy.
Well, shyness and introversion is different.
Are different, yes. Mm. I appreciate
but
that.
But often they go hand in hand. Activism is often extrovert. You're in groups. You're lots of people. It's lots of stimulus. So it can burn out a lot of people. Yeah. A third to a half of the world are introverts, so that can burn out a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I was just doing lots of stuff, because as soon as you get involved in politics, all these other groups go, join our group, this is an important cause, and there's so many important
causes.
And you
find it hard to say no.
And then my job was to mobilise young people and become activists. So my whole life was about activism, because I knew about it, and I was good at it, but it burnt me out. And then I used to love to paint, but I was traveling so much. I worked on a DFID project. I had to travel all over the country. Right. I was working crazy hours. It was a massive 3-year project. And I wanted to paint, and I had itchy fingers. Anyone who's creative, you know, you miss just being online all the time. You're typing away.
Yeah.
So I missed making things.
It's important to be, if you are a creative person, you need an outlet.
Yeah, really good for your mental health.
Mm.
And I couldn't paint on trains because it would go everywhere. So I picked up a craft kit, and I immediately noticed that it slowed me down. It made me aware of how tense I was, how anxious and shaky I was. Every stitch I was like, oh my word, how am I going to be an activist? I'm an introvert and I'm burnt out, but I do want to campaign for a better world. So how do I do it in a sustainable way? But also, I didn't want to demonize people, because it goes against my morals. Why should we scream at people that we want them to change their minds?
Yeah.
A lot of activism wasn't working, and I was reading reports on clicktivism and slacktivism. So we needed new ways. So I noticed that the craft slowed me down and helped me think. People then started asking me, oh, what are you doing? And I could say, oh, I'm stitching this message about inequality. What do you think? And have these one-to-one conversations with retired bankers, single mums, a huge range of people about activism, where if I was standing with a placard and a megaphone, probably couldn't have those intimate conversations. And then I started making these mini banners, which now craftivists all over the world make with my little kits, but just very small, off eye level, so very humble for people to find rather than in your face, again with facts or questions that would provoke thought. And I'd put them somewhere relevant. So it might be outside an unethical fashion shop, or near the banking sector, to linking in with the issue, so you've got the context there, and to try and engage people where they are and not bring everyone to activism. So I googled craft and activism, and the word popped up, but there wasn't any projects I could do or groups I could join. And I personally don't think, I think activism has to be about action and challenging structures and systems. So I don't see donating handmade teddies to children in Africa. One, I don't think it's very ethical or dignified, because they might not want them. And it doesn't challenge the structures of why people are poor or why people need to smile and who are we to say who needs to smile. So all those complexities, I didn't think there was a lot of activism using needlework and the slowness and the gentle protest approach. So sort of started doing my own thing. I asked Betsy Greer if I could use the word, and she said anyone can use it. There's no rules. So as the Craftivist Collective, we have a manifesto that has not rules, Charlie, but guidelines to say it's about solidarity, not sympathy. It's about provoking people, not preaching.
Yeah. Every organisation needs a framework to work within.
I think
for sure.
And I think, again, activism's got to be well done. It's got to be thoughtful rather than thoughtless.
Yeah.
And my worry is when we get angry, we become thoughtless, because we just want to act in any way.
You seem a remarkably placid person, actually.
Placid?
Yeah, you're very calm.
No,
very calming.
I'm so angry.
No, but you give off calmness.
Oh, that's good.
It's
but it's so
good.
Hard this year, isn't it? When you think there's so much going on in the world. And
the last 2016 was, what the hell?
Awful.
And 2017 doesn't look any better, frankly.
So I'm still, I have to do a gratitude jar every morning just to get out of bed to try and be hopeful. And then I talk to people like you about how we need to keep hope and not despair. So that helps.
Does craftivism give you hope then? I'm a campaigner.
Yeah, I can tell.
I feel like I really want to campaign harder and harder and harder, but I don't feel like I'm really getting anywhere with it sometimes. Yeah. And listening to you there, it's almost like craftivism not only is good for campaigning, it's good for the campaigner.
Really, yeah, it helps you be more sustainable. It's about positive campaigning. I call our approach to craftivism gentle protest. So, and gentle not as passive, but in terms of if you're, you know, you gently, you've got a child, you know, you're not going to scream at them to change their mind. I always use my mum as an example when my mum says, "I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed." It affects
you
even
more. That's a killer phrase, isn't it?
And it is, because my mum's saying to me, "I'm not angry, I'm disappointed because I know you could do better. And I'm not going to tell you what you've done wrong because you know what you've done wrong. But I love you so much, you know you could do better, that you're going to change this." And you do, because you think, they value me, they love me, they know I can do better than this, so why have I done this wrong thing? And I just find it really frustrating that in activism we forget to treat people with kindness and respect. We just
That's
go to scream
a good point,
at people.
Actually.
When I talk to board members of big companies and we give them gifts and I say, "I know your job is really difficult. You've probably got loads on capacity wise. You know, you've got a family life as well, but you've got such power. How can we help you to do the best job you can and not blow it?" Which is why we give them handkerchiefs, bespoke handkerchiefs, saying, "Don't blow it. Use your power for good. We know it's a difficult job. How can we help?" Which is much nicer for them to go, "Oh, yeah, it is a difficult job." I was at one AGM last year, and as soon as I said, "We know it's a difficult job," the lady just dropped her shoulders and was like, "Thanks for saying that, because it is bloody difficult."
Do you know, I was talking to a climate action campaigner yesterday, and one of the key things that he said in his talk that really stuck with me was he'd spoken to a lot of oil executives. And he said, none of them actually mean to cause us harm, because you do demonize these people.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone's innately evil. Yeah. I mean, yes, we have a tiny percentage of psychopaths in the world, which is a little bit different. But most people, I'm reading a book at the moment by someone who used to be head of Shell to try and understand where he's coming from, because we do need that intelligent empathy, even if we don't agree, to be like, okay, where have they come from? Where do they think they're doing good work, and where's it going wrong? Because unless we figure out where they're coming from, we'll never be able to communicate well with them. And all we'll be doing, which campaigning can work short term to shame companies, especially shame can work quite quick because PR they're so nervous of. So you can have quick changes, but if you want to change whole systems as well, because we need to do both, is you need people to cling on more to a vision of what they want the world to be, rather than just mitigate the bad stuff and feel like they've been bullied into it. Because as soon as any human feels like you've been pushed into something, you want to react against it.
Defenses come up.
Even if you give up and you change a law in your company or your government, you're not happy, you haven't taken it on board. You know, I think as campaigners, we've got to help people come up with the answer themselves and not us give it to them. So we can say, "We've done all these reports and policies, here's what we suggest, but what do you think?" And then you're showing value in them, you're showing that you think that they're wise and intelligent enough to know what the answer is, and they're more likely to take ownership of what they decide.
It's been almost a frustration for me is that you look at these people and they are intelligent. To the head of a company, you have to be intelligent. So why are they keeping on doing what they're doing?
Things, but you can also ignore stuff, can't you? If you're a millionaire, you don't have to know people who are living on less than a living wage in your company to know the struggles they're going through. I don't think we should scream at them for that. We should just say, "I totally get that you probably don't need to know someone who's the lowest paid in your company. So maybe there's a way that we can connect you both. Would that be helpful? Wouldn't that be useful? Because these people represent your company." Or the same with politicians. You know, they all have constituencies, so they should know lots of people. But once you have an ideology in your head, it's hard to change it, isn't it? So I think we need more questioning. We need more. I always talk about how craftivism, because we're giving gifts to power holders or we're leaving thoughtful stuff around, it's a good way to be critical friends with each other rather than aggressive enemies.
Do you know why I love this job with Lush? Is I get to talk to people like you
who
have a completely different approach. that I've never thought about.
But isn't it common sense, Charlie?
Yeah, but it's as a campaigner and being an activist, you kind of get stuck in one direction, one way of doing things.
But then you look at who's made change in the world, and a lot of them are gentle. So I watched the film Selma the other day while I was making all these kits for the Lush Summit. And Martin Luther King is incredibly gentle. Yes, he's tough and he's strong, but he says, who do we target and how? We're going to be non-violent. We're going to stand here because vulnerability is power. Yeah. Everyone's going to see us be beaten up and they're going to watch the TV set and go, this is awful. Yeah. He'll stand in a room with the president and say very calmly, you need to give us the vote. Yes, it's legal, but as you can see, in Southern America, people can't sign up to do it. There's lots of other issues there, and you're the person to do it. And one of his most amazing, I think the tipping point with him and the current president at that time, whose name I can't remember, was saying, what do you want your legacy to be? Do you want it to be that you supported this or that you were against this? And you can see it in the president's mind of, I do want my legacy to be a beautiful one.
Yeah, yeah.
And Martin Luther King just quietly leaves him with that. He doesn't scream. You know, when I do stuff with politicians and board members and I have really long conversations with them after giving them a gift and I ask lots of questions, strategic questions, but I'll ask them questions of, well, how does that fit in with this that we want as a human race? And you can see the dots connected. If I say, climate change, if I say, look, we obviously want our world to be a healthy one. So how does fracking fit in with that? And I'll ask it as a question exactly like that. And then they have to explain it and they can't cut and paste an answer. But they also know that because I've given them a wobbly handmade gift that's taken me hours, that isn't perfect, but it is positive and encouraging rather than demonizing. And I'm saying, I'm giving this as a gift to you to encourage you in your work. And I want to know more, which is why I'm asking you these questions. So many times they thank me for asking the questions and not shouting at them. But also they'll say, if you were outside with a placard, we wouldn't be talking to you.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what I find so frustrating in campaigning is I know it can work, but we need some humility and we need some hippie love and we need to be gentle, but also really crafty in terms of we need to be skilled and thoughtful. And that's what I try and do.
How do you get to these people in the first place? How do you get into these boardrooms?
I'll buy a share. So I worked with Share Action, who are an amazing charity, bought a share for the Marks and Spencers AGM. So I'm a shareholder.
Yeah.
And I got 14 craftivists around the UK who were loyal Marks and Spencers customers, because Marks and Spencers are going to listen to their customers and not randomers, and that look like their main target demographic. So mostly older women. And we went in as shareholders and gave them their gifts. And you forget that you can meet these people. And as a shareholder, they want to meet you. But we could
have... They don't often give you long conversation time, though.
No, I mean, we had quite a quick time with them handing over the gifts, but they were so impressed by... They all had bespoke gifts because we Googled everything about them, what colours they wore to use the right thread, where they volunteer to come up with a timeless quote if it was about gardening. One of them was a trustee for Kew Gardens, so we did a quote about flourishing. One of them loved music, so we put music notes all over it. So it made them really bespoke to them. And we ended up, they had meetings with us after not having meetings for years with Share Action and the Living Wage Foundation about the living wage.
Yeah.
They said, okay, well, yeah, we'll have a meeting. And we had 4 meetings with them over the year. And they kept referring to their hankies, and then they upped their wages to their staff on the least wage, on the smallest wage they had. They increased it to the current living wage last year, not accredited, but now we're trying to campaign for accreditation, and now they're under the living wage a little bit, but we helped them increase their wages for 50,000 staff by using gentle protest with craftivism. And we went back last year and spoke to, had much longer conversations with them, who said, we love our hankies. I went home and showed my 2 sons and they asked me what the living wage was. One of the hankies is in the archive in Leeds and the board member said only really like powerful things go in there. One of the wives of the chair of the board said how impactful it was. She wanted to join the Craftivist Collective but felt like she couldn't. shouldn't because
right.
of...
It might not look
if,
quite
you know,
right.
Your MP has to meet, yeah. You, if you ask to meet your MP, they have to give you a time for you to see them in their surgery.
They have to, but they don't often have a meaningful conversation with you.
But you've again, it's that trust. It's trust.
It.
So it can, you know, I'll have 3 minutes with someone, but as soon as you ask a question rather than demand stuff,
yeah.
as soon as you humbly give a gift, and
a
I tend to
gift,
be,
as you just
I, yeah,
described
I tend
it.
To be like, I know it's a bit wobbly, but I really do care about it. Whereas, you know, some people who love craft will go, I'll make 20 hankies and I'll fling it in my MP's face, and you think, well, that's not going to help anyone.
That's missing the
and
point.
And if you do it as a way to show off, you miss the point. I just written a book that's 80,000 words on all of this stuff because there's so much you can
When's
say.
When's that come out?
October.
Yeah.
And it's called How to Be a Craftivist, The Art of Gentle Protest.
And where can we get that? Because it's
in all major stores, but buy it from your local independent bookshop or buy it from me. It's with Unbound, who are under Penguin Random House. So you can buy it all over the world. Which would be brilliant.
Do you know, craftivism sounds so simple.
And
when I saw
stupid,
you
did,
no,
but it's
it
not.
Doesn't sound stupid. It just sounds simple. But there's
but
this
not.
Real intelligence.
I think if you want to do it well, it's a bit like making a chair. You know, there's a craft in it. You could make a really wobbly chair, or you could make a beautiful, really comfortable chair.
Yeah, but you're making bespoke chairs, and,
yeah.
and you're working out what kind of wood the person would like
exactly.
it from, and what kind of style they'd like it from.
And my hope is that that's what the book and all my kits do, is say, yes, you could make anything, and it could be called craftivism, but will it be effective? And if we want to make long-term positive change, let's do it in a thoughtful, careful way. My little label say, made with courage and care, that you put on everything. And that's what I want. I want people to be courageous and say, okay, it's quite scary to give a gift to someone I've never met that I disagree with, but I'm going to have courage and do it. And you've got to be really careful and say, what font am I going to use so it's not aggressive? What words would resonate more with them that is might be different to the language I use? You know, really empathize with the perpetrators just as much as the victims.
Sarah, listen, who's this for? You've mentioned introverts, you've mentioned burnt out activists, but anyone can do this, can't you? Because I came to the Your Workshop
mm-hmm.
and there was
a mix.
I wouldn't say a vast range because it's quite a small area, but it was a real mix of people.
Yeah, all ages, all backgrounds. I learned to craft from YouTube, so I always say if I can do it, anyone can. And all my projects, no one's never been able to do it. We have, yeah, a huge range. A lot of introverts, a lot of shy people, a lot of people new to activism and scared of activism, like the aggressive
the
stuff
come
along. The
people who don't want to go out and stand on the streets
yeah,
and yell at people.
But also those who have done that for years, who feel
yeah.
completely burnt out or feel like they don't want to be this angry, negative person. I had this amazing single mum in Stockholm where I was there for 5 weeks doing an exhibition and workshops, and she came and said, I'm worried my daughter just sees me as angry and aggressive and I need to change it. What can I do? And she came to my workshops, and I did this little well-making clinic where I do one-to-ones with people and give them prescriptions of what magazines to read, what actions to take. So it's a real mix of people. Some people who are housebound do it at home on their own with my kids.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah.
Some people do it just with a friend. We have women's institutes who take part who are extremely politically influential. So I'm always keen to get them involved. People all over the world, people who set up their own craftivism groups. But yeah, a massive mix. So all the kits and tools are on the website. The manifesto you can download as your checklist. The books... Everyone. No excuse, Charlie. Join in.
Can you believe you're at the core of all this?
I'm not at the core. I'm one of many craftivists, and our approach is gentle protest.
Are you
so
really? You're really not at the core, or you are at the core and you're just being...
No, I think I'm part of a movement of people using craft for activism, and our approach is this gentle protest where we need to be strategic and thoughtful.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, completely random. I mean, I never knew, thought this would happen. And I started just tinkering on my own, and then people around the world wanted to join in. And then I get to work with art institutions and teach around the world and do collaborations with amazing charities. And it's, yeah, I'm very lucky.
We're very lucky you're doing it.
Please join in, because I can't do it on my own. So everyone join in. If you're listening, go on the website and join in.
What is the website?
The website is...
We didn't ask that.
craftivist-collective.com. So for the southerners in the room, that's craftivist.
I love talking with people who really make me think.
So, oh, good.
Sarah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're doing just an amazing job. It's been a privilege to meet you.
Ditto, kiddo.
Sarah Corbett of the Craftivist Collective. If you'd like more information about this gentle activism, please have a look online at craftivistcollective.com or at their Facebook page. Thank you very much indeed for listening. If you'd like to hear more Lush podcasts, and our ever-growing archive contains interviews with a wide range of charities, organisations and individuals, please download the free Lush Player app, which is available for both Android and Apple.